Hello, everyone. Welcome to the We Are Children's Division podcast. It has been a while, but we once again have with us Ashton Kiever. Ashton is back from maternity leave, and Ashton had a great idea while she was gone. Ashton thought, while all her creative juices were flowing while she was away from all of us, she thought we should do an episode, which is basically as seen on TV or as seen in the movies, what can we learn from the depiction of child welfare in cinema? And what can we learn from that? And what are the observations we can make from that? And so that's really kind of brilliant and interesting and fun. So if you love this podcast, you can thank Ashton. And so, Ashton, how are you?
I'm great, and I'm glad to be back. You know, it's good to have some adult time again.
Indeed it is. I know my wife always expressed that every time she was on maternity leave too. It's like, oh, she hated to walk away, but also understood that, you know, boy, having some balance was really good. So also with us are our deputy directors, Tiffany Moore, Danielle Corley, and Angie Swarns. They're all here, and they are going to comment. How are all of you today, by the way? The three of you, everything okay?
Yeah, you're doing pretty good.
All right. Well, it's always great to see them all together. They're the brain trust, man. They know what's going on. So how we're going to do this is Ashton is going to play clips of these movies for us to listen to. And then, you know, as Tiffany and Danielle and Angie are sort of the child welfare experts here, we're going to have them comment on this. And I might look at it from the legal perspective, and Ashton will look at it as a human being and a mom. And we'll just have a great conversation. So we've got four movies we're gonna look at, right? We're gonna look at King yep. Richard, which is about Venus and Serena Williams and their experiences with their father. Lilo and Stitch, which is a Disney classic, and Mrs. Doubtfire and Instant Family. So we're gonna play and listen to those clips. Anything you want to say about those selections, Ashton? You picked all of those, right?
Well, you mentioned a couple of them, and then I did a little bit of research, and then Angie and I had talked about Instant Family, which was on my list, but I wasn't sure if we'd have time for it, but I really want to make time. So I guess my disclaimer for any legal reasons is we don't own the rights to any of these films or the copyrights or whatever. We're using them for demonstration purposes only.
Totally right. We've talked about them. We know that it's all part of our popular culture, these movies and these stories. So Ashton, what are you gonna play first?
Okay, so we're gonna do King Richard first. If you haven't seen King Richard, it's about Serena and Venus Williams, and their upbringing. It's about their dad, and kind of how he was as a parent and getting them to where they are now, which is like incredibly successful tennis players. So,
but why are the police here?
I don't know.
No, ma'am.
What's going on? Everybody okay?
They got a call, said there was trouble in the house and that we were being rough with the girls and they needed to look.
A call from who?
Not at liberty to say.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. You all need to look around? Great, you can check on in the cupboards. Maybe you can go check under the beds, make sure it's no monsters.
It's a little wet for practice, don't you think? Don't the girls have schoolwork to do? They do their homework. Tundi's first in her class. Lynn and Isha are too.
That's right. Girls, spell civilization.
C-I-V-I-L-I-Z-A-T-I-O-N.
Okay, Mr. Williams, this is really not necessary.
Hold on. You want to check on the kids? Let's check on the kids. We got future doctors and lawyers, plus a couple tennis stars in this house. Now, I understand you got to do your job, even if some crazy neighbor do call talking foolishness. And I don't even mind you saying we hard on these kids. You know why? Because we are. That's our job, to keep them off these streets. You want to arrest us for that? Fine. But what you're not going to never do is come knock on this door talking about you had to blow their brains out in them streets because they running with hoodlums and doing drugs and things. That's what you not never gonna say in this house. You want to arrest us for that? That's fine. You need to be arresting them parents at gym tennis matches. That's who need to be getting arrested.
This one was a powerful scene for me for many reasons. I think the biggest thing, Ashton, was thinking about how, you know, they came to check on the girls because they said the parents were treating them rough. And the basis was the father was having the girls out late at night practicing tennis. And so, you know, when the teacher questioned them about, well, isn't it kind of late, you know, in school night? And the mom's response is, well, wait a minute. My girls are at the top of their class. So, you know, just thinking about the kind of environment they were living in and the way the dad reacted, it was really around the fact that he was very aware of the culture in the community he was raising his girls. You know, in other parts of the movie, they talked about the father was attacked. You know, there were guns brought out. He was beaten by, you know, youth in the community who were being pretty aggressive towards his daughters. And so this is a man who was very well aware of the dangers his girls could get into in the community if they were not closely monitored and supervised and supported. So I think, you know, just thinking about the situation that family was in for them, he felt strongly that keeping his kids close was the safest thing he could do for them as a parent. And I think mom felt the same way.
I think the other thing it really does a good job of touching on is that when we get a call from the hotline, the allegations that come in that are represented by that caller and how they're framed and how this starts out with that they needed to come and look, you know, to look. And, you know, dad goes into, well, check for monsters, check for, I can't remember what else he says to check for, but, you know, he's looking at what he considers to be unsafe versus what an outsider is considering to be unsafe, whether it's the late hours out in the neighborhood or practicing for lots of hours in some pretty severe, we have some conditions, right, that they're out practicing in that somebody thinks are concerning. So I think from that side of what our staff are going in and what they're asking based on a call to the hotline versus what they walk into and how it's difficult to change that in the context of being in the house. Because we've got a piece of paper that tells us these are the allegations. How do we relate that to the family? How does the family then receive that message and respond back? Overall, you're seeing a response from a very caring and committed father that's very concerned about the safety of his daughters. And like Tiffany said, what's he doing to prepare them for the neighborhood, for the world that he knows the challenges they're going to face versus what a system goes in to look at from a call?
I think to piggyback on kind of what Angie was saying, there's the conditions that they were concerned about is that it was raining. And so I think you regularly see in high school sports, coaches practicing kids in the rain. And so it's interesting that piece made it through a hotline avenue when a parent is doing it versus a coach in the community.
That's a really good point. Yeah.
Yeah. So back in the day, Northwest High School, Daryl was running track. It was my birthday. So it was like in April, right? It snowed. And coach had us run in the snow. In our shorts, he made us take. I'm to this day, all these decades later, I'm wondering what in the world were you doing? But you know, we all make those judgment calls, right? I mean, and people make them, and so people second guess them, and yeah, it's really interesting. And you know, I talk about this scene a lot when I'm talking to people about what we do in our work because here's why. Well, first of all, it's understandable that Richard's upset. Dad is upset. And I think we sometimes fail to understand that people get upset and you know, then they're tagged as negative or uncooperative or different. But, you know, his first question was, is everybody okay? And then it became, oh my goodness, now I'm feeling attacked. And you saw it kind of escalate as he did this. But what I tell people all the time is I think that this demonstrates the impact that just our investigation has. I mean, nobody got taken. Nobody wound up in care, not even for 1 minute. But this was a movie. If you've watched the movie, this is a movie about Venus and Serena Williams' life. It's about their childhood and their life. And that call and that couple of minutes that we just listened to made it into the movie. You know, the other traumatic things in their life didn't make it into the movie. The flat tire on the way to the store, the bad breakup with the boyfriend, the other things that might have been traumatic, they did not make the movie. This made the movie. So lest we question the impact of what we do on the lives of people, understand that our appearance, the call and our appearance will make the movie of their life. It will be a significant event that we need to make sure that we handle well. And to understand that I think it really goes into our efforts to do prevention. If we can prevent that call, if we can prevent that ever from getting to that place, that we're doing something good, because this is traumatic. The investigation itself is traumatic. So
I'm gonna cut you off. I think you made a point with your coach when you were talking about people being concerned and people up in arms. And I think what you typically see in that situation is people call the coaches. Parents call the coaches and they're upset and they're angry and they're frustrated. They might even call an administrator. But I don't know where it ever fell off the radar for people to interact with each other, for people to call the parent and say, hey, the girls told us that they're practicing in the rain and outside in the dark, or the neighbors are coming across. Like, where did we stop reaching out to parents? And I think in some places and some spaces, we do that really well. But you're right, this prevention piece is going to give us an opportunity to do more engagement with parents and hopefully model that and learn from the community members that are already doing it, because we have a lot of really good community partners who are already practicing great engagement with families. And so I think that's a piece that stood out for me when you were talking.
The movie, I think, does a really good job of juxtaposing this family, which you're totally rooting for, and they're like the good, versus all of this negative and hard stuff that's happening around them, and like the bad, right? And so you see, you're like the good guys. Why are the good guys being called on? They're the only ones in this neighborhood taking care of their kids or whatever, you know. It was hard to watch, but as a parent, I would have probably reacted the same way as their dad did. I would have been like, fine, look around. I am hard on my kids, but that's why they have straight A's. That's why they're, you know, excelling. So it was a great watch.
They're emotionally okay. Mm-hmm. Like, that's the other piece. Even if they don't have straight A's, they're emotionally okay, and their family is they love each other. I mean, that's a big piece of it. So,
mm-hmm. Right. And this is based on a true story. I mean, this really did happen, which is very different from the next one, which is Lilo and Stitch, which did not happen, could not happen, will not happen. In fact, it's not even acted by real actors. It is animated, right? It involves a space alien. So go ahead, Ashton, why don't you do Lilo and Stitch now?
All right, here it comes.
Do you often leave your sister home alone?
No, never. Oh, well, except for just now. I had to run to the store to get some. Oh!
You left the stove on while you were out.
Chloe! Just a simmer. It's coming.
Found that this morning.
Lilo, there you are, honey face. This is Mr. Bubbles.
Nice to meet you.
Your knuckles say cobra. Cobra Bubbles. You don't look like a social worker.
I'm a special classification.
Did you ever kill anyone?
We're getting off the subject. Let's talk about you. Are you happy?
time adjusted, I eat 4 food groups and look both ways before crossing the street and take long naps and get disciplined.
Disciplined?
Yeah, she disciplines me real good. Sometimes 5 times a day. With bricks.
Bricks?
Uh-huh, in a pillowcase.
Okay, that's enough sugar for you. Why don't you run along, you little cutie? The other social workers just thought she was a scream. Thirsty?
Let me illuminate to you the precarious situation in which you have found yourself. I am the one they call when things go wrong. And things have indeed gone wrong.
My friends need to be punished.
Call me next time you're left here alone.
Yep.
In case you're wondering, this did not go well. You have 3 days to change my mind.
So I want to start off here. Evidently, I'm the oldest person, and so I've seen Lilo and Stitch. And while I did not remember Bubbles or Cobra from Lilo and Stitch, what I certainly remember from Lilo and Stitch is that these two girls are in a situation where their parents are deceased. And so the older sister has to step up and raise Lilo. And you can see that she is certainly an adventurous little girl and putting a lot on her sister for new responsibilities. And I think this really opens us up to thinking about what our relatives face when we call them and we need a placement for a relative, because we catch them at moments that they're not prepared for. They haven't thought about becoming a foster parent. They're not thinking about what it will be like today to all of a sudden have a 6 or 7 year old in my house. How will I work into their schedule and my schedule? How will I all of a sudden become a chef? How will I all of a sudden become a counselor? How will I all of a sudden become a parent when really I'm a sibling? Or what does that do as far as changing different relationships and expectations? You know, this goes on. Of course, the star of the movie, Stitch, isn't even in this clip. So then Stitch adds a lot of extra dynamics to this household, which, you know, everybody needs to sit down and watch Lilo and Stitch to spend some time. But one thing that we really learn, and I think this job does a really good description, or this film really helps us really see, is specifically this is looking at a Hawaiian family. And we have learned a lot from what it means in the Hawaiian culture to really wrap supports around a child and a family. And I think this is seen a lot in this movie, but we can learn from this on what it means to support families and to look within our own communities as to what's there, and to really look at the checkboxes aren't so important. It's the relationships that are important. And I don't know, I know that in Missouri, we are about 50% of our placements are with relatives. And when you think about that and the changes that people are willing to make to keep kids in a family setting, I couldn't be prouder of the work that families do to take care of their family members.
Tiffany, Danielle, what do you think watching Lilo and Stitch? You guys have not seen Lilo and Stitch, but you saw this clip. So they're younger than Angie and I, and so therefore they've for some reason not seen Lilo and Stitch. I can't believe it. So watching the clip, what did you observe?
I think the piece that stands out to me is we all too often come across the idea that people should always be on their A game, and it's just not real life. People are living, people kind of echoing what Angie was saying. It's you're meeting somebody that probably is one of the worst chapters of the entire storybook of their life. You don't know the beginning chapter. You don't know the ending chapters, but you come in the middle and are expecting things to be perfect. And that just wouldn't be the case for any of us, I don't think.
Yeah. So what you can't see on a podcast is that there were boil. The stove was covered with all this boiling stuff, which in my recollection is that that the sister, the older sister, didn't do that. Lilo, the little sister, did that, or Stitch, the alien, did that. I mean, they had a space alien, a mischievous and somewhat destructive space alien in land in their life. They thought it was a dog. It really isn't. And you know, it was a life changing thing. So, you know, Danielle's right with regard to having, it's as if you've seen the whole movie, Danielle. It really was not their best time. Tiffany, what did you think having watched the clip?
Well, first of all, it was pretty cool. I had a hard time not laughing out loud. But I was really intrigued by the point when the older sister was her sister. Sister was in the background kind of giving her cues and kind of trying to tell her, you sleep well, you do these different things. And then the girl is saying all these outrageous things about, you know, how she's disciplined 5 times a week. And I think the interesting thing about that is, you know, in our reality is one of the main reasons why we talk about visiting with kids alone, right? Like having them in an environment where they are alone and we get to engage with them on their level and talk to them about what's going on. But the sister is frantically in the background trying to help paint this good picture about how things are going. And the baby girl gets it all wrong, right? She misses the whole message about what she's supposed to say. But the interesting thing about this kid throughout the whole thing is she's cool and she's confident. Mm-hmm. Like she, you know, she talks to this big guy and she goes, have you killed someone? Because, you know, this social worker is coming to her house and he looks like a Secret Service agent or somebody who's there to, you know, defend the universe. So she has this cool and confident demeanor. But in real time, our kids don't always experience that, you know, they don't feel that level of comfort, right? This is a TV show, obviously, so they're not going to see a big person come into the house who looks very serious, and they're going to just feel that comfortable, right? Like this kid does. So, you know, it puts me in the mind of how important it is for us to have that relatability factor, right? Like thinking about getting down to their level and, you know, using language and words that they feel comfortable with and having that engagement with them where they naturally, you know, they will be comfortable talking, but they don't feel intimidated just by your appearance alone, right? So that was something that really stood out to me. That was a good clip.
Yeah. So Daryl, if I can jump in, I wanted to point out something from the other side. So what you don't see in this clip, like throughout the whole movie, it's basically her sister trying to keep them together. You know, Angie kind of mentioned that. And to do that, she needs a job. She probably needs some help with childcare. And not to mention, they just lost their parents in a horrific car accident. So like, they also probably need some grief counseling. How would this movie wouldn't have been a movie if they had all of those supports, kind of like Daryl mentioned with King Richard. If they had you know, the trauma, it wouldn't be the movie, you know. But one of the things I wrote down at the very end, so like Stitch comes in, spoiler alert, Stitch comes in and all these things keep going wrong. Eventually she's left at the house. She's only supposed to be at the house for like 15 minutes alone so that her sister can go get this job and come back really quick. That was the plan. Well, the aliens decide that's the time to take Stitch back, and the house blows up. And so obviously the fire department is called, and Lilo is home by herself. And she calls Bubbles because I don't think at this point Lilo understands the seriousness of the situation, who Bubbles is and what he's there to do, but he's gonna take her. And he makes the comment to her sister, Nani, I know you're trying, but you need to figure out what's best for Lilo, even if that means removing you from the picture. What does that feel like on their side of it? As a caretaker who this is her last piece of her family trying to hold it together. I don't know. That just hit different when I was looking at it through this lens.
Well, it's really interesting, that Ashton, because I think that's the question that is, If you're from the outside, you're not in child welfare and you're not in the legal system and you're not this, the question is, how does the public perceive us and our work? And this, I think, is a reflection of that. I mean, just the name of the social worker itself is such a, it's such a dichotomy that it's his name is Cobra Bubbles. I mean, it can't be more vicious and warm and fuzzy at the same time. It's such a contradiction. We are a contradiction. We're here to help you, yet we have the power to do things that could result in your children being taken away. The power to destroy your family. I mean, if you watch the whole movie, what you find out about Cobra Bubbles is he's a former CIA agent. I mean, they draw him as this massive guy who could pick up your car, you know? I mean, that's who he is. And, you know, spoiler alert, in the end, Cobra Bubbles turns into he's kind of the villain throughout the movie, really, except for in the end, he does turn out to be a good guy. But when I first right after I got elected judge back at the time, shortly after this movie was a thing, and we were talking about I was at a Rotary. Was it Kiwanis? It was one of those things, you know, in the Jefferson County area. And I was speaking about how, you know, our system had some trouble. We're going to try to do things in a more, you know, kind, compassionate, merciful, trauma-informed way. And the lawyer who had invited me got up and said, I want to tell you what this whole thing makes me think of. He says, it makes me think of Lilo and Stitch. It makes me think of that movie because some people have aliens dropped on their life. Some people have stuff happens to them. And in the movie, Stitch, who doesn't speak much, he doesn't know much English. He's an alien, right? But what he does say is basically, this mess is my family. And it's small and it's troubled, but it's my family. And that's what this lawyer said. And I sat there and I almost teared up thinking about it. I'm like, you can't cry over a Disney cartoon. You can't cry over, but it really is that kind of meaningful. And that's, you know, why sometimes I'll also talk about Lilo and Stitch, because you know, it is a way we are perceived in a way we you know, should not be perceived. And a way we should not be. And it's, you know, we got to recognize that there are alien things come into people's lives that impact them and make a difference. So any other thoughts about Lilo and Stitch, Ashton?
I just think that it's a good watch. And if you haven't seen it, you should get on Disney Plus and click play.
Okay. So the next clip is Mrs. Doubtfire, right? So, yep. So he plays Mrs. Doubtfire. He pretends to be Mrs. Doubtfire so that he can be a caregiver to his children. He's pretending, he's dressing up and pretending to be this other person. So he is this other person. He is Mrs. Doubtfire when he's coming to his door and the social worker person is coming in to check on him. So that's the scene that you're getting ready to see.
And I think it's her first visit to his home. So for context, here goes.
Excuse me. Mrs. Selner, have we met? No. But Denny's told me all about you. I'm his sister. His much older sister.
You have his eyes.
Oh, all if he fills out a donor card.
Is Mr. Hillard in? I have an appointment.
Do you? Oh, that's wonderful. Well, let me go upstairs and get him and he'll be right down.
I'll come with you.
No.
Yes.
Why?
Because I have an appointment on Monday and Friday evening to check the apartment.
I remember him seeing something about that. Are you sure you want to walk in, dear? That's three floors, hoofing it all the way.
If you can do it, I can.
I'll bet so. Is your ticket all right?
Top notch.
Oh, good, because I don't want to jumpstart you. Door. Oh, come in, please, dear. Sorry about that. Here we are. Daniel's aboard. Oh, it's mine here. I'm a messy house guest. Well, just make yourself at home. I'll be right back. He'll be back. I'll go get him. Don't be afraid. I'll be right there. Don't worry. Danny! Danny, boy, where are you? Oh, here he is, dear. I found Danny. There's a Mrs. Selner here to
see her.
Oh, is she here?
Yes, dear, she is. Mrs. Selner, I just got out of the shower. I think you'll be very pleased with me. I've been through some really interesting changes, and I'm becoming a new man and a model father.
He'll be right there. He's just changing, dear.
Yes, I want to keep you abreast of some of the changes in my career. There have been two big developments. I'm finally starting to come into my own. Things are really starting to take shape, and I'm blossoming. Really, I am. Things were hairy for a while, but oh, I'm in great shape now. I'm my own man now.
Oh, yes. Job I could really sink my teeth into. I'll be right there, Mrs. Selner. So nice. I don't have to save face anymore, Mrs. Selner.
Mrs. Selner, how are you? Always a joy. If you wanted some cheese, why don't you just say so? Well,
I know you'll be happy to know that I now am holding down two jobs, one for an educational film and TV company, heavy responsibility.
And the other?
Cleaning houses. Not mine. Big girl.
Your sister is English?
Oh, she's half English, half American. Half sister, really, so that makes her about an eighth English. I don't know, I've never really done the math. You see, my father was American. He flew for the English during the war. He was in London and met this lovely English woman. Well, my sister was the fruit of their passions. Sorry. My sister's not yours.
Okay, so just to give that some context, what you were listening to was him changing from Mrs. Doubtfire back into himself. And if you've, you know, if you've ever watched a lot of Robin Williams, it's just brilliant because he does all these voices and he can turn into other characters. And in any of his movies, it's sometimes completely made up as he goes, you know. But so you don't know what's in the script and what's not, and it's just really interesting. But he's essentially trying to, and his apartment was a wreck. Which you can't see his apartment's a wreck, and he runs into the other room and is changing from being this other character into being himself. So team, what do you think about the depiction of social work in Mrs. Doubtfire? And Angie, why don't you start? You've been starting us off. So what do you think?
I think what really stands out to me in this, first of all, Robin Williams. He's got to be everybody's favorite, just on screen and off screen, as we know that, you know, he battled a lot in his own personal life. And I think about what he does in this film as a dad that's so out of character. But to me, it tells us to always think about these things that parents do that we might not understand the motivation behind what they do. But that their love for their children, even in bad and difficult situations, comes out in ways that we need to really take time to reflect on. I mean, Mrs. Doubtfire changes her whole life so that she can spend these extra hours, or he can spend these extra hours every day with his kids. He dresses up. He pretends to be a nanny. He's in cooking in his own home. He's cleaning in his own home. And he's building a bond and continuing relationship with his children in a way that would be so extreme, but he does everything that he can to continue to be around his kids. And that's what stands out to me, is that the sacrifices he makes, but other people from the outside wouldn't understand the motivation behind that. And I think sometimes we can get caught up in that. We don't understand why they did what they did, to either protect their child or to spend time with their child. We don't understand maybe why they don't show up for a visit. We just don't understand what's behind the action. And that really could really encourage us to try to take the time to understand that.
I think that's powerful stuff, because I'm looking at this clip and I, you know, recognize that it looks like he might have forgotten that he had this visit with the social worker, but he's doing all these things, right? To your point. He's out there trying to make things happen for himself, for his kids. And then he in this moment, he adapts so quickly to be able to accommodate this social worker who shows up at his house. Her visits were scheduled, which was kind of cool that she, you know, did have a plan to see him, but he didn't remember. But he quickly jumped into, okay, I need to get in character and I need to tell this lady and show her what I'm doing. And I think that's, you know, just thinking about what parents go through. And while I was watching that part, I made a note about the fact that, you know, when we talk to people as social workers and we're engaging with people, the goal is we want to talk to them as people, right? You got this social worker, she's got her notepad, and we know we have to take notes and things like that. And she's jotting down all these notes about what she's seen and how the house looks and everything he's saying. But, you know, having that connection with the person, to Angie's point, to really understand what their motivation is, you know, what is going on, and what circumstances are the most impactful for them at that point that might be keeping them from whatever their goal is. And so I thought that was pretty powerful stuff in that short clip.
Yeah. I just had a couple of things to add, echoing both of those. But Angie had mentioned, I think, a few clips back about a checkbox, and that it really kind of stood out in this one. He's doing everything he can to spend time with his kids, to keep that relationship going, to grow that relationship. And we're still trying to figure out the, well, but did he do this? Did he do this? Did he do this? He did the really important things of trying to keep things going. And I think that's the other. And my reference point comes from the Broadway version of this versus the movie version. So if there's some differences in there, I apologize. But it just, his love for his kids just stood out to me. And it was another one of the situations where I'm like, I feel like we can do more with father engagement and how we do that, not just engaging them to do the things that we want them to do, but how can we empower them to be really great dads? And how do we support that? How do we grow that? Those were the few things that stood out to me. So,
Ashton, I'd like to get your thoughts as a human being before I shift into our thoughts, my thoughts as a lawyer, because I've got thoughts about this one as a lawyer. So what were your thoughts with the clip?
I just think, like, as a parent whose house is never clean, okay, for other reasons, but my, you know, it feels exposing when somebody, even a friend comes over and you've got clothes everywhere like that. So I can't even imagine being in a situation where my kids are on the line, and this person's coming over to judge who I am as a parent or how I'm going to be as a parent. By their job. So what made me think about is, again, as the audience watching the movie, you're totally rooting for him. And we feel like we know him personally, like we'd be a great reference for him, but she's coming in and doesn't really know him. So all she's seeing is this tiny snapshot, this tiny piece of how he's living. So like does it look like he's being a good dad from her perspective, you know? And I think that's sort of what you guys were saying too, but I think it's also a good example of how far dads and families might go just to be together.
Yeah, I think that's all very insightful, Ashton. I think that's totally right. And, you know, that's an issue of the heart. This clip is different from the others because of the context. This is happening in the context of a divorce, all right? And it's, my recollection of the movie, it's not that I don't know if child welfare was contacted or if this social worker was just assigned to this thing, but this is in the context of one parent versus the other parent, one family member versus the other family member. And I think what this demonstrates correctly is that sometimes people weaponize us, that they you know, make the call and they get beefy involved and they bring us to put our thumb on the scales of justice and try to make things happen. And I had it happen on a regular basis. I handled a large divorce docket once upon a time. And we would have pretrial conferences and this would come up you know, children's division's involved in this now. And a call has been made about something. Sometimes it happened, I don't know, 10 years ago, and sometimes about something that was or wasn't true, or and often So how you would see a divorce progress sometimes is that they would have had enough of each other, and now they're filing for divorce, and now they're getting aggravated with each other because they're doing things to each other during the course of this litigation that's really bothersome, and then they get very, very angry, and then it escalates, and somebody has called Children's Division, and I would tell the lawyers and say, well, so your client has decided to go nuclear here and do this. And what occurs to me, even as I was deciding to come here a couple of years ago and do this work, is that if we're doing this right, I mean, if we really are doing our work correctly to where we're offering services that help people, nobody would call us in order to thwart the efforts of their worst enemy. They would not do that. People would not. You don't call an agency that's helpful to you that's going to be helpful to your soon to be ex during the nastiest of divorces. And that's the context in which we find ourselves. And I think it brings my mind to something about all three of these clips that I think puts them together. Is they don't, none of them, not one of them, follow our prime directive to help people. Not one of these clips involves somebody saying, here is help we can give you for your thing. You know, I'm coming bearing gifts of support for you. That's not the content. And because it's not the way we're seen, and it's because historically it's not the way we've been. And I think that that's something that's educational from this, is that we can really take from these examples exactly why we need to do prevention, why we need to be open to helping people and making things better for them. So those are my thoughts about that, Ashton. I not to completely hijack something, but when it's in the context of the divorce and it matches with the others, I wanted to try to string that together. So that brings us to our final clip. You got one more clip, right? So
I do.
And this is from which movie?
Instant Family. And basically they decided rather than have children, they were going to become, they wanted to adopt. So that they wanted to start with fostering to adopt. So this is actually towards the end of the movie after they've kind of built some relationships with these kids. And so they're supposed to have a visit, or I think actually in this situation, the mom was supposed to be coming to take the kids back home, like on a trial basis.
Guys, mom's here. All right, get up. Come on, let's go. Lita, come on, be your stuff.
Bye, Meatball.
Hey. I've got a car seat for Lita if you don't have one. You guys picking us up? Where's mom?
She was supposed to meet us at the office this morning and she didn't show.
No.
She didn't answer her phone.
But did you go to her house? What if something happened to her?
Yes, we went to see her. She was very ashamed. She said she can't do it.
No, she didn't. No, because why would she, Why would she fill out all the forms and then the court stuff and the reunification stuff? She didn't.
Lizzie, your mom said you filled out all those forms.
Well, I helped, but so what?
She felt she was being pushed into something that she wasn't ready for.
No, I didn't push her. She's ready. Just let me talk to her, please. And then we can figure something out. And
honey,
she can take me home.
Honey, when we saw her, it was obvious she's using again. She's not coming, baby.
Sweetie, we're so sorry.
Lizzie. Hold on, Hannah. Let me watch the kids.
Wait there, okay?
Lizzie! See? No, we're not. You know what we are? We're here.
That's right, we're here. And we love you.
What? No, you don't. You don't even know me.
Hey, what the hell's going on out here?
Could you just give us a few minutes, please?
Oh, okay, sorry.
Okay. So I guess one other piece of context, there's three kids in the sibling group. One is a teenager, one's kind of like maybe later elementary age, maybe middle school, and then the other is she's quite a bit younger.
They're in care because mom has dealt with a lot of things, including a substance abuse disorder, right? So that's where we are. And Angie, what do you think?
So not only can you not see the actors on the screen as you listen to the clip, you can't see the expressions that they provide because there's so much more to the storyline that you can just see with their body language. But you should also know, sitting here in this room with the three of us, you should see our body language, and that you can't watch this movie without a box of Kleenex. And it doesn't matter what angle you're watching this film from. If you were a child that had been removed from a home, if you're a foster family that has gone through training, if you're an adoptive family searching for permanency for children or providing permanency for children through adoption, if you're the social workers, the two that show up at the scene to meet with these kids, or if you're the nosy neighbor who pops up here at the end of the film. But I just can't tell you what a phenomenal job this film does in providing a real look at the system that we work within. The two ladies that come out to tell the kids that they will not be going on this extended visit with their mom, they provide the foster parent training early on, and they do an amazing job really talking about what it's like to be a foster parent, what it's like to be the person that the teenager Izzy will later lash out on. In this film right here at this clip, Izzy physically runs away from this curbside setting. And the foster parents physically run after her. They're exhausted. And they're not just exhausted from the run. They're exhausted from the scenes in the home of competing with Izzy on whether or not they can be the parents of these two younger siblings. Izzy has parented her siblings for a long time. It's a role adjustment for everybody in the household that this goes through. It is the disappointment that they're having to shelter these children from when mom's not able to make the changes. It's also, the parents are battling with their extended family on what it means to be a foster parent and to take children into your home where you might have expectations. The little boy in this, like the dad thinks he's going to be like his carpenter buddy or his sports buddy. The little boy in this film is so not athletic and he's not coordinated. He can't hammer a nail. And the dad is patiently going through all of this of what they think a placement will be like versus what the reality is. I can't go on and on about. I mean, obviously I've watched this film numerous times. It's reality, I think, in the work that we do. And a shout out to the people that have the strength to do this, to support our kids and to walk alongside them and support the children as they have to go through really difficult lessons and trauma to be able to come out successful at the end of this journey. I just can't say enough about this film. I would also just put out there, don't sit down and watch it without a box of Kleenex.
Well, I have never seen this, and I just couldn't stop thinking about this teenager and how traumatized she was by the thought that she wasn't going to go be with her mom. And I don't want people to underestimate how much it means to kids to be with their parents. They want to be with their parents. They go through great lengths to do that. We have teenagers in foster care who sometimes, you know, not going to an environment where everything's new, even with well-meaning people, is extremely hard for them. And sometimes they don't adapt. And it's that part of it that is the heartbreaking thing to see, because you have this community that wants to wrap their support around this child, but it's not their community. It's not where they grew up. It's not where they went to school. It's not where they have the friends and the connections and the lifelong relationships and the experiences tied back to when they were little. And for this girl in that moment, even hearing that her mom was struggling with addiction, she's thinking about what, you know, what she's losing. And that's hard to watch. It's a powerful thing, and it's hard to watch. And it's just a good reminder of, you know, that connectedness that kids feel, and how it really takes a whole village to come around them and support them with that.
I'm still a little bit traumatized over here, so I'm trying to recover from this. The piece that I think that's important to me is making sure that our kids get a voice, because it's important for them to hear what's going on. They love their family. They want to be with their family. And if it is appropriate at all, I think it is important for them to be included in the meetings and in the conversations. And, you know, because this young lady, because it could have potentially, I loved the fact that the social worker showed up on the doorstep to do it versus making a phone call. We don't all get the luxury of doing that from time to time. And so I think that was important, but I think it is important for them to understand and hear it, because she potentially could have been left with, no, because last time I was with my mom, we were filling out paperwork and it was fine and things are good. And now you're telling me something different, and having to reconcile that. And so I think it's important to have good therapists and good communication with our kids.
Yeah, I was just going to point out the fact that she filled out the paperwork for her mom. That's how bad she wanted to go home, even though she knew the situation her mom was in and the likelihood of what was happening again. She was more interested in keeping their family together. And I think that like completely speaks volumes about what you guys are striving to do by putting the family first and like keeping that bond so such a high priority.
Well, because it's all about relationship, right? I mean, this girl loves her mom. And contrary to what some of the more judgmental among folks might think, it, undoubtedly mom loves her. The bond is real. It's mom has been overwhelmed by an addiction, and it's impacted her life. And you know, having talked to more children than I can count over the years of having been a lawyer and then a guardian ad litem and then the judge, because I would talk to them, and having talked to so many parents in that situation over the years, including in treatment court, by the way, because once you can get folks clean and it becomes a totally different thing, how heartbreaking the whole thing is, and our failure to recognize that and to react appropriately with regard to that heartbreak is something I think that's been a big mistake that, you know, and something that I think we do that's a terrible mistake is, especially with these older youths who need to be heard. I mean, that I would have filled out paperwork to stay with my mom. I would have done it. In her worst psychosis, I would have done it. I would have done anything I could to maintain a relationship with the people I love. I just would have. To remember that we do something really harsh to people when we say either or. When we say you have to either, you know, you have to either love your mom and be with your mom all the time and have your mom be completely capable of doing this, or you have to cut off mom and be with these other people who, as she said, aren't my parents. They are the best people in the world. These are great, great people. But in her mind, they're not her people. And that, you know, to try to, in a way, be more nuanced and open and understand that these kids in their hearts don't fit into our little checkboxes and paradigms and spreadsheets, that it's more complicated than that. And just being open and supportive of all of their connection and their relationship is an important thing, very important thing.
Yeah. We were at a awards ceremony. Tiffany, I think you were there too, in St. Louis not very long ago. And I think there were three sets of foster parents who were honored for their work with biological families and making that gap a little bit easier for kids, bridging that gap and just coming alongside the biological parents and working with them. And it was, they were crying when they were receiving the awards. It was great to see that and hear that piece. And I think that is so important.
Well, and I was there at that ceremony. I spoke at that ceremony. Yeah. I spoke at that event, right? And, you know, hearing them, you know, sort of express what their stories were, and to have people recognize what great and important work that is, it heartened me a lot. The fact that this is what we're recognizing is when people are working with these families. When back in Jefferson County, when I was a judge, I spent a lot of time recruiting foster homes. I spent a lot of time recruiting foster homes, and some of my friends ended up doing that. And among the best of them, is this family who, you know, they've had foster kids come in and out of their house now since I've done that. And what they have become are aunt and uncle to those kids. They have become that. I will sometimes say, hey, you want to get together? It's like, well, we got all the kids over this weekend because, you know, their parents are going off to do this other thing. And it's like to maintain that relationship and that support. So they supported the relationship from which they came, and they maintained and fostered the relationship with these kids that they built themselves and with the parents. And that's the best model ever. When you've got people who are willing to do that, it makes everything, and it makes things easier on those kids when they know I don't have to choose between loving which set of people who love me. I get to love everybody, and that's a great thing.
Well, foster parents don't sign up for all of that heartache. There's so much heartache that goes through riding those ups and downs, and that really played out in this piece. I still don't know that I'm going to go watch it, but it really played out in this. It's just living that heartbreak with those kids, and
the thing I wanted to point out, though, like, as the parent, I don't want to discredit the mom, because yes, she relapsed, she was using, and that is really hard. But I think the bravest thing she did was not show up for that meeting, because she knew she couldn't handle it. And as a parent, that's hard for me to digest. But I have 3 kids, and there are some days that it's really hard. And so, like, I can't imagine, on top of that, struggling to, like, battle an internal thing on top of all of these other external people that I'm in charge of. So I think it was really, you know, I don't think the mom should be always seen as the bad guy, or the parents should be seen as a bad guy in these situations, because really, like, she knew she couldn't handle it. So I think it's really brave that she didn't show up for that meeting and made that choice to keep her kids safe.
Really great point, Ashton.
I agree. Yep.
Well, what you did right there, Ashton, is you took yourself into that mom's shoes. You said, okay, what if I'm dealing with this? And if any of us anywhere thinks that it could not have been us, that we could not have, started struggling with a mental illness or an addiction, or those things go together so much that, you know, you begin to wonder, where's the line between one and the other? If you think that could not happen to us, well, I think we need to take a step back and say, I could have gotten hooked on something. I could have had terrible circumstance. I could find myself in that spot. And I think recognizing it and remembering it is a big part of us handling these cases well, handling these situations well, in a way that is, again, compassionate, merciful, trauma-informed, and wise. And I think that's, and you know what, if what you did, what you did not see in that clip, which I think is, I think it might have been Angie said, you didn't, to see it, you got to see it to understand this, the heartbreak on the face of those 2 social workers, that this was not going to be a success was difficult. And I think, you know, it seems to me, I get the impression that at the end of the day, that teenager is going to have the ability to maintain relationships with people that can be maintained. And that is very important. And I think it's important for us to remember, and it's important for us to facilitate as we go forward and do this work. So,
Ashton, this exercise has been really, I really liked it.
And I think it's probably in the back of my head, I'm thinking we could do these in local offices and like have touch points along the way. I really appreciate you thinking of this. It's been, outside of that last clip, this has been really enjoyable.
Yeah, this is why all of us should go on maternity leave for a little while to come back with great ideas, right? Because that's what happened to Ashton. It's like a sabbatical, Ashton. You come back even more brilliant than when you left, you know? So,
I appreciate that.
Yeah, well, and as we wrap it up, I got to say thank you to Ashton for all of this work that she does in doing these podcasts. And it's great to have you back. And I know we're going to have great topics going forward. We're going to continue to have great conversations. It's going to help our practice and help us as we go forward and are continue to build something new here that is great and is terrific for kids and for families. So any parting words from anybody before we are done?
I don't have anything.
All right. Hearing none, I want to say thank you to everyone who was here for this podcast, who listened in. And be watching for the next one to drop. And we will see you next time on the We Are Children's Division podcast. Thank you, everybody.
We hope you enjoyed this episode of the We Are Children's Division podcast. Check out our other podcast, The Call to Foster, a podcast dedicated to sharing real experiences from foster parents, advocates, and former foster youth, which aims to secure safe and nurturing homes for children in Missouri. Don't forget to like and subscribe so you don't miss any new episodes of the We Are Children's Division podcast. Thanks for listening.